From U to Uachtaráin. I don't know. From Who to Uachtaráin. There it is. There it is. From Who to
Uachtaráin. There.
It's better to smoke fags in a group than vape alone. That's what I say. I lurch from they need to be cosseted to chop off the hand within the space of an hour. But that can't be the basis for criminal justice policy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Few Scoops, the news podcast who tries to keep you informed without depressing the life out of you. My name is Aoife Muir. I'm an author and journalist. And my co-host, the king of the County Cork, is comedian Colm O'Regan.
Good morning, everybody. Yeah, obviously, as a rebel county, we really don't hold with the monarchist view.
Oh, sorry.
But pleased to be from here anyway.
This week, we have the targeted murder of journalists in Gaza, an insane tweet by UEFA, overcrowded prisons in Ireland, racist attacks on our Indian community, a businessman has finally entered the presidential race, and the secret to living longer. The genocidal onslaught in Gaza continued this week, and on Sunday, six journalists were killed when they were sheltering in a media tent outside the Al-Shifa hospital. The most prominent journalist that was killed was 28-year-old Anas Al-Sharif, who had claimed he had been threatened by Israel for months. They claimed without evidence or any proof that he was a Hamas operative, something that there has been no independent verification of and something he always denied, along with another Al Jazeera correspondent, Mohammed Krikwi, who was 33, cameraman Ibrahim Zahir, who was 25, Mohammed Nafal, who was 29, and Mohammed Alawa, who was 23, and their assistant. This is the largest, I believe, mass death of journalists in the war on Gaza. The numbers differ on how many journalists have been murdered by Israel. Some Western outlets say 186 have been killed in Gaza, and other outlets says around 230. It is hard to tell because many people are still trapped under the rubble, and Israel continues to lie about the targeting of journalists, even though we have seen this long before, actually, October 7th, Israel has targeted journalists. And just for people listening, it's worth noting, deliberately targeting journalists is a war crime. Israel also stated that they did target Al-Sharif, but then killed another five people in the aftermath. So they are blatantly admitting that they targeted one person and saw the other four people as collateral damage. Al-Sharif had two small children, and he left a will in which he begged people to look after his children and to remember Gaza, do not be silenced. And he asked Allah to judge the people who were silent. I attended a vigil at the Spire in Dublin yesterday. There was about 100 people there. It was organised by Emma O'Kelly from RTE. And I find the hypocrisy with which the world's media treats the death of Gazan journalists absolutely disgusting. We know in this country what it means to murder a journalist. We have seen Veronica Guerin murdered. We saw Lear McKee murdered. And the people who murder journalists are the people who are afraid of the truth. And no one is more afraid of the truth than Benjamin Netanyahu and his cabinet. And if this were journalists of any different colour, any different creed or any different nationality, there would be uproar. George Bush killed an Al Jazeera journalist in Iraq decades ago, and there was worldwide scandal about it. If this was CNN staff, if this was MSNBC staff, there would be sanctions, there would be inquiries, there would be tribunals. And what we saw yesterday was massive broadcaster repeating, without evidence, the lie that one of these people who was murdered was a Hamas operative. They didn't say that they had done any of their own examinations into whether this person was Hamas. They just repeated what the Israeli army said. And we have experience of this in this country, on this island. We were told on this island that our loved ones and the people who were begging for their own civil rights were terrorists. without evidence, and they were defamed, and then they were killed. And the reason they do this is because apparently when you kill a terrorist, it doesn't matter, that that person didn't matter, that their life didn't matter. And Israel has been doing this for months. Hamas are everywhere. Hamas are in the hospitals. Hamas are in the tunnels. Hamas are here, there and everywhere. Ireland is doing the work of Hamas, apparently, by passing the Occupied Territories Bill. And I have been incredibly disappointed and revolted by some of my colleagues in the media who do not see the lives of Arab journalists as equal to the lives of Veronica Guerin or Lyra McKee or, you know, Mari Colvin, who was killed in Syria.
Something like 70% of the journalists killed in 2024 were killed by Israel. And the other people who specialise in this, Putin in Russia, mm-hmm. targeted journalists, Mexican gangs,
yep.
and the militia who fight them, target journalists, mm-hmm. Philippines, people targeted over political coverage, Syria, of course, Afghanistan, the Taliban do it,
yep.
Extremists and corrupt politicians in Pakistan, Somalia, and then in the Ukraine war. So that's who... That's the company they're keeping.
Oh, of course, the LVF in Belfast, who murdered Martin O'Hagan in 2001, who worked for the Sunday World. So this is the kind of yeah. company that Israel is keeping. And I just wanted to add this from the Community for the Protection of Journalists. Jody Ginsberg, who's the chief executive, said, "I have no doubt that the prevention of international access, the killing of journalists, the targeting of media facilities, the punishment of Israeli outlets like Haaretz, is part of a deliberate strategy on the part of Israel to conceal what's happening inside Gaza." And for people who don't obviously work in the media, journalists, independent journalists, have not been allowed into Gaza since October 7th. And my view of that is, if Hamas really was everywhere and doing everything that Netanyahu says, why wouldn't you let the world's press in to see it? The only reason you stop the press coming into somewhere is because you've something to hide. And the reason that they target journalists is because they want to keep it hidden. I was despairing yesterday, and I found it, the vigil last night, very, very sad. And it's also worth mentioning, you know, there were dozens more people murdered by Israel on the same day, and they continue their bombardment of Gaza. And Netanyahu says that the plan is now to completely take over Gaza, to ethnically cleanse the region, and that Israel will completely take it over, and the world watches on. The only good news, and we talked about this last week, but Australia is set to recognise Palestinian statehood. We've seen Norway come out and cut ties financially with Israel. But I don't know, I don't think I have anything productive to say, Colm. Is there anything you've noticed in the last few days that you think we could see something changing?
Little glimmers in the European Parliament. 100 MEPs have signed a statement, I think, asking for the EU to, is it, cut their preferred trading status link mm-hmm. with Israel, which 100 is more than it was before. So it is glacial, the pace in the other direction, but it is moving forward in some direction.
Another person that was killed by Israel was a footballer. Colm, do you want to take this one as our resident sports correspondent?
So Palestinian footballer Suleiman Al-Obaid was killed in Gaza while waiting for aid. Mm-hmm. And that's another story. The amount of people have been killed while looking for food. But UEFA, the governing body of European football, UEFA tweeted in response to Suleiman Al-Obaid's death, "Farewell to Suleiman Al-Obaid, the Palestinian Pele, a talent who gave hope to countless children, even in the darkest of times." So they tweeted that.
Farewell.
Or X'd it.
Like,
farewell.
Mind
yes.
the roads.
He lived a good life, passed away peacefully while avoiding starvation under heavy gunfire. And Mo Salah plays for Liverpool.
Okay.
Top scorer in the Premier League, I think, in four of the last five seasons or numerous times. He responded on Twitter to the post saying, "Can you tell us how he died, where and why?" Like, very straight-laced reply, seeking facts, and UEFA have been silent on it. But it does, like, the framing in any conflict of, you know, airstrikes or conflict or clashes, all of that kind of language obscures they shot at the person, they bombed them from the air, they launched a shell filled with shrapnel. We never describe what actually goes into the killing of people.
Oh no, we do, when there's a set narrative. So you'll often hear that Palestinians die. You never hear how they die. They must spontaneously combust, because Palestinians die or Palestinians are killed. but you never hear how. Whereas in
because
other conflicts,
of choices they made. They made some choices. That's how they got into that situation.
In other
that's,
conflicts,
that's great.
And say when they're talking about, you know, Ukrainian people who are bombed by Russia, press agencies will say murdered by Russia, or Israelis were murdered on October 7th. But Palestinians just die. And words are so important when it comes to this. And to write farewell, like, see you later, bye mucker.
Yeah.
To a man who was starving to death. And then, so was it an airstrike on the aide, or how did he actually die?
An Israeli strike targeting civilians waiting for aid in southern Gaza, according to the Palestinian Football Association. So again, a strike, like, we should call these bombs launched from artillery guns or from the air, really. I wouldn't say Mo Salah has been the most active online about it, but look.
Here, if we get under the celebrities who haven't said anything about Gaza, he's probably not at the bottom of the list.
I think Mo Salah's intervention is good, important, and it draws attention to the fact that saying the word farewell after somebody was killed while queuing
murdered
for food is a use of words that is disgusting.
Yeah.
So thanks, Mo, anyway, for intervening.
Thanks, Mo Salah, for that. And as we say, you know, there's plenty of celebrities who have said absolutely nothing, so something's better than nothing. Now, we're going to do a more local story. The Irish government has said that they are now going to take a comprehensive approach to the Irish prison service strategy, ensuring the availability of modern detention facilities with adequate capacity. So for our listeners, Irish prisons are very overcrowded. The reason is not because Ireland has become more dangerous, because actual violent crime has reduced, even though many of us feel very unsafe. Actual violent crime statistics are going down. However, we are currently at 117% capacity in our prisons, and that is because our population has grown. And when a population grows, the prison population also grows, because that's human nature. But we have not built any more prisons, and we have not extended any of our current prisons. So in June, we have 14 prisons in this country. We had 2 spare beds. And as somebody who has worked in the Central Criminal Court, let me tell you, more than 2 people are going to prison every day. So there was 1 spare bed in Arbour Hill, and then 1 in Cavan, which is an open prison, not suitable for most people. As of June, there were around 5,415 people in custody, but only 4,672 beds. This is important because when people go to prison, and I know a lot of people won't want to hear this, but most perpetrators of crime are also victims of crime. A lot of them have addiction problems, and a lot of them have very clear and present mental health issues. If we want people to get better in prison and reform and get clean and have some sort of suitable mental state to be released back into society, which a lot of people do, we cannot treat them like shit. Making these people more cramped, more annoyed, and taking facilities away from them will make them worse and more unsafe when they get out of prison. So this government now basically has said it is going to be a priority. In the 2020 programme for government, there was basically 1 sentence about prison capacity. There was no numbers for extra spaces and no commitments on building new prisons. But that now has changed. The Minister for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan, says that things need to change, that we cannot continue with this as obviously Ireland's population gets bigger. So a new prison at Thornton Hall, which is in North Dublin, is earmarked as a super prison, a term I absolutely hate because it reminds me of America.
Yeah, I don't like the term super prison either. I remember from watching, I think it was Orange is the New Black, they kept on going on about Supermax, and I hope that won't come over here as a term for prisons as well too.
They are going to basically build this new prison with a high dependency unit to address severe mental health and addiction challenges, hire more therapeutic and medical staff, including psychiatric nurses. So what do you reckon? What do you make of that, Colin?
Well, criminal justice, crime, it's one of those things where everybody's really understanding until
something happens
in the Mike Tyson analogy, they get a punch in the face and then they're like, lock up those scumbags. Mm-hmm. I don't care about their upbringing or their mental health. So that's emotion. Emotion can't rule when it comes to criminal justice system and sentences. Like, the government, they need to persuasively make the argument that money spent, even if it's just an economic argument, leaving aside the bleeding heart liberal, we should treat people well stuff, that nonsense, even just the money spent on rehabilitation, on diversion, is going to make returns. Because it's all about harm reduction. Like when you look at some people and they're on their like 150th conviction and you're like,
yeah,
surely that alone tells you it isn't working. And it's not medieval times. You're not going to wall them up in a tower. They will get out. So if they don't have the help they got in jail, somewhere to land when they come out, the step down, the transition, they're just going to do more crimes.
What I would say about someone with 150 convictions, I always think, like, obviously people are so annoyed when you hear it, 150 convictions. But what that says to me is this person, it's usually a man, but what this man has not realized is that he's really bad at crime. Like, you've been caught 150 times. Do something else. Try something
else. Well, they've been caught 150 times. They might have done, that might be still things, one in three. You know, that might be good averages. Like, if there's any message to come out from this podcast is we need good information and good quality communicating on all sides, because crime is the easiest one for knee-jerk reaction. And we're so susceptible to it. Yeah. I am myself. I lurch from they need to be cosseted to chop off the hand within the space of an hour. But that can't be the basis for criminal justice policy. So you said earlier, violent crime is going down, yet we feel unsafe. Some of it is perception. Some of it is the types of crimes we see.
I would like to just give you some statistics as well, because what we hear from the far right, as usual, are lies. The far right claim that things are getting more unsafe and more violent. And ironically, things are getting more unsafe and more violent for some of our ethnic minority communities because of the far right. But Gardaí statistics from May said there has been a significant decrease in robbery, burglary, violent disorder, crimes against the person and theft. There have been some increases in some offences. So public order is up 2%. Fraud is up 61%. I would say that's a lot to do with, you know, the digital era we're living in. And shoplifting is also up 2%. Overall, sex offences and domestic violence offences remained static. But hey, but I just want people to know that even though we feel more unsafe, we know that the stats are telling us crime is down. However, I think the advent of social media, people recording crimes, posting them on TikTok, posting them on Facebook, a lot more in-your-face crime. So even last night, I was in Dublin City Centre going to a play, and I seen two fellas knocking the shite out of each other on Marlborough Street. And I think that makes people feel more unsafe, especially in city centres. And I know for victims of crime, and I am one of them, I have been attacked a couple of times in my life. And it's very hard to say, oh, we should treat prisoners better, because all you want to do is lock them up and throw away the key. But we know in the long run, these people, as you say, will not be locked up forever. And what we need to do is try and make them less dangerous for when they get out of prison. So I think this is going to be a tough one. I don't know. At times, I think it's a tough one for the government to sell, because it sounds like they're trying to treat prisoners better. But also, building another prison does very well for the law and order type people. Build more prisons and lock them all up, Colin.
Well, build more prisons, give them more space is possibly a win-win. And like in some ways, there is good news in the sense that I met with people who work in youth, kind of general youth diversion.
Yeah.
Right. And when you hear youth diversion in the context of a news report about a crime, it boils the blood, because you're like, they need a kick up the hole, not diversion, right? That's what you, that's, you know, a couple of slaps. And I'm, well, I'm not the man to do it. Somebody else is the man to do it.
It never done me any harm, said the man repressing all his trauma, never been to therapy.
Some men will do anything. Some men will get involved in criminal retribution rather than go to therapy. But when you meet people and you meet the kids, and they are children, and you don't want to see them as children because they're tall and they're good at fighting.
Yeah.
And you hate them and they broke your stuff, or they hit you.
Very my type as a teenager.
You're like, fuck them. I don't care about their childhood. I don't care about their mental health or their trauma. That's only modern bullshit. But when you go to places like in Ballyfermot, there's a place called Candle, and you see where they are being treated as human beings, and they're given a bit of space. And the people in places like that tell you, like, so much crime is so opportunistic.
Yeah.
They'll get up that day intending to meet their probation officer. And as Dunbelievable would say, whatever move I made, they get into a fight on the corner of their estate with somebody from some old beef, and then they're into this next of their 150th offence. And it is opportunism, it's circumstance. And honestly, there's very few completely awful, evil bastards. They do turn their lives around, but they need space. The problem is we have the worst of both worlds here, in that we have half measures. So we have the don't lock them up forever, but don't do anything else either.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, a lot of these people, again, and it's something I have no patience with in the knee-jerk reaction, but you have to sit down and listen to it. The mental health issue, like, there's a reason why the graph of people institutionalized in mental health institutions and the graph of people incarcerated all over the world has headed in two opposite directions.
Mm-hmm.
People who are in jail, who really should be getting some sort of psychiatric treatment. Doesn't sound revengey enough for people.
No.
We hate it. It's like, fuck them, they hurt me. But they're going to hurt you again if something isn't done.
Yeah, they're going to hurt someone
else. This is something where if somebody's giving you a quick answer, they know fuck all when it comes to crime. That's my sum it up there.
That's why this
says he's summing it all up with one sentence.
That's why this podcast goes on for over an hour sometimes.
Yeah.
We're going to move on. We've talked about this before, but I thought it was important that we followed it up. On Monday, the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, said he is deeply concerned about attacks on Ireland's Indian community in recent weeks. He met with the Ireland India Council after they requested engagement about the number of assaults, threats and attacks on Indian citizens. For those who don't live in Dublin, Dublin is undergoing what I could call a spate of horrific, unprovoked racist attacks on not just Indian men, but now Indian children. A young 6-year-old girl was slapped and attacked on her bike when she was out playing in the street. She was told to go back to India. A taxi man has been attacked. A doctor has been attacked. A man we discussed earlier was stripped naked and left for dead in Tala. And this is only the things we are hearing about. You know, Indian people, people of colour in general in this country, are often spat at, shoved, victim to horrible verbal abuse. And it is getting worse and people are feeling more and more unsafe. And because of that, a community day that was organised for the Indian community in Ireland that was supposed to be in Phoenix Park this weekend has been cancelled. And the Indian community said that they just did not feel that they were safe enough to have this event, which they have every year.
The teenage gangs who were doing some of the attacking in some of the incidents you mentioned, again, you want revenge on them. But again, we need to understand who is manipulating them. Why are they in a situation where whatever they're up to, general people hanging around kind of stuff, how has that transitioned into attacking people? What messages are they getting? What social media is whipping up the kind of frenzy that gets them into that? Because again, these are not criminal masterminds that are doing this. This is opportunistic. It's got a particular, it's like hate fueled, but it is, it's focused on a particular area.
And particular people.
It wasn't happening last year. Nothing has changed in the country. You know, there aren't 16 times more Indian people than there were. These are people who are neighbours of them.
So representatives from the India-Ireland Council said what they would like to see is further arrests, relevant education for children on integration, which I think is essential, integration initiatives in communities, and a separate transport police in Ireland to free up Gardaí. I believe this is because a number of people have been attacked getting off public transport or no longer feel safe on public transport. I think what's clear is this is being whipped up on social media. We've seen this in every country in the world, and now it has come to Ireland. Just for facts, because I know the far right have been lying about this as well, there are around 80,000 Indian people in Ireland, and the population of Ireland is 5.3 million. So a very, very small percentage of our country. And I would say, as someone who worked in politics under an Indian Taoiseach, or a Taoiseach of Indian descent that we had, Leo Varadkar. Whenever I would write a story about Leo Varadkar, and whatever you think about Fine Gael and whatever you think about Leo Varadkar's politics, when I was on Twitter and you would post your story about the Taoiseach, I would have to turn notifications off on my phone just because of the sheer amount of racist, anti-Indian bile. And it's the same mindset behind these attacks, that because you are a different colour, you can't be Irish or you can't be in our communities.
Also, this is stuff that it's originating abroad as well, a lot of it coming from accounts generated by bots. And there's money in this as well. Whenever something happens for no reason, people are making money off these comments and this kind of hatred, because it's exploiting the bit in us that gets angry before it gets reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if nothing else, we are being exploited by outside elements as well, making lots of money by engineering hatred locally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we always try and give some advice, or maybe something you could take away from this podcast. It's an incredibly tough time, I think, for the Indian community in Ireland. And if you have Indian neighbours or mams at school or dads and people in work, just reach out. Just send them a text, send them a message and say, here, it must be really tough to read these things every other day, and we're here for you. And I know it might seem awkward, but I think they'd really appreciate it.
The worst that can happen is a neutral response, I would say. I doubt that they would ever bristle at it. I think when you send somebody a text saying, thinking of you, whenever you do that in bereavement, in any kind of situation, people do feel comforted. They go, all right, they are. I was wondering why they hadn't said anything.
Yeah. I mean, don't send it at like 3 a.m.
Yeah.
That's a very different thinking of you message.
Don't overwrite it. Just, yeah. You up. Just a simple text.
Sorry, I've lost it. In the bath, thinking of you. Right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We've made this weird again, haven't we? Yeah.
Sorry, I have to calm down. Now, this week, we have another potential entrant to the Irish presidential election due to be held in November. Businessman Gareth Sheridan has arrived back in Ireland from a spate living in America, founding a medic tech company. He's 35 years old, and he said he wants to be a voice for the young people in Ireland who are completely disenfranchised. He said there's nothing to vote for. They don't have a voice. And they're not listened to.
I don't like your tone, Aoife. I sense a sneer. You're 35 or something. You want people to be enfranchised.
I'm 34.
Okay, sorry. I can't believe I misaged you.
So,
Gareth Sheridan. So it's somebody new, not political, he says. Although I saw a politician, I don't know who it was, saying, oh, you can't say you're not political when you're looking for political office.
Yeah,
you stop becoming not political as soon as you seek election. But anyway.
Yeah, ironically, running for president, saying that he's not political. He did, you can listen back on RTE. He did an RTE and News Talk interview yesterday. He said he doesn't fall down on left or right. Okay. So he lived in the US after built up a successful pharma company. He is married to a model and former Mormon. They have an adopted daughter, a totally modern family. Gareth Sheridan is funding his own campaign from his savings, he said. So what I would say, he doesn't get into left or right politics, but in order to become the president, you obviously have to get the backing of 20 Oireachtas members or 4 local councils. So it's important for Gareth Sheridan to meet these councillors. And the person he's chosen to introduce him to these councillors is Sharon Cohen. Sharon Cohen is an independent senator. She has previously suggested there was an organised LGBTQ plus takeover of society. She also organised an event in Leinster House which featured a panel of prominent far-right individuals and anti-vaccination campaigners. Now, when he was asked if he held similar views to Ms. Cohen, his spokesman said that he was his own man. He's not aligned to anyone else's policy position or any political party, and he never has been. He said he is progressive and positive. He is not beholden to anyone else's viewpoints on any of those topics. He's very confident that he can get on the ballot. He said he was inspired in part to run by the nurses in Australia who want to come home. And he said there's division in the country. It's concerning and troubling. Just to be clear, the president cannot do anything about nurses who want to come home. As much as
you can
I'm
employ,
sure, like,
you could employ one nurse in Áras an Uachtaráin, maybe as the the local nurse. But other than that, no control over that kind of thing.
Yeah, so now to be very clear, he's not on the ballot yet for our listeners. As I said, he has to get 4 local councils or 20 Oireachtas members. The Oireachtas members will be much harder to get, obviously, because we know that Fine Gael are running former MEP Mairead McGuinness.
Yeah.
And independent TD Catherine Connolly is backed by the Social Democrats, People for Profit, and recently the Labour Party. Fianna Fáil have not yet decided, and Sinn Féin have yet to make a decision. Sinn Féin are under a lot of pressure to announce their backing for Catherine Connolly, but it remains to be seen. And also Michael Flatley of Riverdance fame has also said he would like to be president, and disgraced MMA fighter Conor McGregor has started a change.org petition because he wants to be president too, but it looks highly unlikely that Conor McGregor will get anywhere near it, thank God.
So in terms of the Dáil, like, the Fine Gael have their people, Catherine Connolly, Social Democrats, is it Greens, Labour?
Well, there's only, it's not Greens, Green.
Green, the Green.
Roderick O'Gorman, the sole Green
Roderick
TD.
Roderick O'Gorman, sole Green.
He's back in Catherine Connolly.
So at the moment, what you don't have is the Healy Rays and the, is it Michael Collins, those, the rural independents, the who'll Michael Lowry back, that might be Fine Gael in return for, I don't know, an oil pipeline to my Boris or something like that. So the TD thing's sketchy for him. That would be
it's
hard.
It's highly unlikely he'll get 20, because if you think, like, most of the opposition is already back in Catherine Connolly, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil aren't going to back a different
candidate. And Sinn Féin have no reason to back him. There's no link. They have no kind of,
I think,
he would just be a dude, a farmer bro.
Yeah, he's a farmer bro who has built up a successful company, but I don't think he's expressed any real Republican credentials, which Sinn Féin would be interested in.
He hasn't shown a penchant for fundraising. He has fundraised millions in the United States, so surely that would attract Sinn Féin to him.
Yeah, they have that in common.
Albeit from venture capital. I mean, it's interesting, like, we haven't had the wealthy businessman yet, so he's our wealthy businessman character in this, in the presidential.
Former presidential candidate Sean Gallagher served as the president of Gareth Sheridan's company. However, he said he had not asked his former colleague for any advice, which I would say is probably a good idea considering Sean Gallagher ran twice and couldn't win it.
It's a tough one, though, in general, and I'm sure we'll talk about the presidential campaign loads over the coming weeks. But the bit where because you're more than likely, you're statistically very likely to lose a presidential election bid.
There can only be one winner.
If you're any kind of outsider. If you look back at the last nearly 40 years, there's never been, Sean Gallagher was close enough.
He was,
but it's really tough to be any kind of outsider. And so the councils for Gareth Sheridan would be the next route, but they would be looking at him going, just fair play to you, young lad, but
we
have our vote sorted now.
Because councils backed Peter Casey to get on the ballot last time.
Oh, they did, 4 of them did the last time,
And Peter Casey, again, lived in America for a long time, built up a business over there. To be fair, he had been on Dragons then, so he was a wee bit more well-known in Ireland in terms of name recognition. And this fella is a stranger to the Irish public, basically.
So he has a book called From No to NASDAQ.
Oh, so Jesus Christ.
His next book will be From O to the Oris. From O to Uachtaráin. I don't know. From Who to Uachtaráin. There it is. From Who to
Uachtaráin there.
the Uachtaráin. Very good. Okay, we've done about 5 grand's worth of brand whiteboarding for him there. So hit us up, Gareth. We'll obviously run the IFA rule over you, whether you're sound ideologically.
We'll ask him what his views are on, you know, League of Ireland and Camogie Scots.
Yeah, well, actually, speaking of which, again, through Grita Tees, congratulations to Galway beating Cork. But the best thing about it was they got to wear whatever they wanted around themselves. skirts or shorts, there was a choice.
Less debate about
another woman. Victory for pro-choice.
Yeah, less debate about what women wear for everyone. I'm going to come into the studio next week in a bikini. Right.
Yeah.
You'll still be in Holly,
so
you'll miss
Cork.
It anyway.
I can't see it. Yeah.
This will just be a special surprise for Siobhan. And on that note, Colm, give us some good news for this week.
Yeah, okay. Always with good news. It's slow, it's long term. This one is a long term study.
Small incremental changes.
Exactly, yeah. Bad news happens in a flood. Good news, just take some time. This one is about super agers. So if you're interested in living long on this planet, which becomes an odd choice. Yeah, the merits of that we'll put to one side about whether it's just better to just check out early. Mm. But people who live routinely well into their 80s, 90s and beyond, they're being studied left, right and centre, of course. One Northwestern University study, that's somewhere in the northwest of the United States, I'd say.
Not Donegal.
No, not the University of Lifford. It's just marked 25 years researching super agers. All the people they're studying are currently 80 or older. Oh, so okay. They're talking about people who are currently 80 or over, but they've been researching them based on the kind of genes they have anyway as likely super agers. So they're probably going to keep going. They have a good look about them.
Great.
So 25 years of a study. So there's found stuff in the brain, you know. I mean, I don't need to tell you about the brains having a thicker anterior cingulate cortex or higher numbers of von Economo neurons and also don't seem to develop Alzheimer's-related plaques and tangles, or if they do, they don't have the associated cognitive impairment. That goes without saying. That's the kind of stuff we'd be bantering over coffee anyway.
When I'm out in a pub, I am never not talking about plaque on your scalp or brain.
Exactly. But anyway, they did find one thing, though, a common lifestyle trait that these people had. It's about staying connected. And these are people, they don't necessarily have to be social connections, but people who live long, one of the things they found about them is they're connected to the land, connected to their ancestry, or connected to their grandchildren or their art. So if you are the kind of person who's routinely researching ancient land disputes.
Thank you.
Yes, looking up wills, trying to find who really owned that and who is a blow-in. There might be merit in that. But seriously, people who do have this kind of connection, and I think it's good to bear that in mind when in the midst of bad news and you're feeling, oh, that being connected with other people who are also saying, oh, well, that does feel like misery-loving company. Actually, some sort of community that you form around the bad news, whether it's activism, just sympathy, hanging in there together in the best possible way, it's better than nothing, you know, and it's good for you.
Yeah, I've often thought community would save us all. And we know, obviously, especially elderly people, you know, isolation and loneliness is such a trigger for poor health. And I actually read a study once about how the people who watch the news constantly are more depressed. However, people who involve themselves in activism because they watch the news are less depressed because they feel like they're taking steps to remedy the problems they see in the world and they're connected to other people. You know, no one likes to be think of old people on their own. You know, you see like an old man out for a pint by himself somewhere and it pulls at the heartstrings. And I think it's because deep down we know that everybody should have a community and we are being told that it is actually good for our health. You know, it can encourage people to live longer. So maybe this is people's sign to check in on your granny and granddad. My granddad, Granddad Danny, is still alive. He's the brave old age. I think he'll be 88 in February. Still drinks me under the table. I think he would like less visitors, to be honest. But maybe this
people
is
sniffing around his stuff, moving things in
says,
the house.
Yeah, he says all the time that he's haunted by grandchildren and sons who just keep coming to his house and eating his food. But anyway, maybe this is your sign to, and if you're not part of a community and if you're feeling quite lonely and it can be quite an isolated place, especially if you've had to emigrate or you don't live at home, join a book club, join a run club, go and take a cooking class. It's just important to be around other people, even when you can't be arsed. And I know a lot of us can't be arsed a lot of the time, but it is important.
Well, what do they say? Loneliness is as bad as smoking in terms of its effect on your lifespan. So
yeah, but you look much cooler when you smoke.
Yeah, it's better to smoke fags in a group than vape alone. That's what I say.
Vaping never looks cool, to be fair.
Yeah, I do need to include the government warning underneath that. That's the great causes, all sorts of et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. See if you can find somebody before buying 20 Sweet Aftons. And if you are isolated, form a group around this podcast. Tell us your good news and we'll include you in some sort of social club that has yet to be defined. I'm leaving that up to you to do the emotional labour on that one, Aoife.
Thanks. A woman as usual. And Calm, I believe you have more sport for us. A few scoops doing a few sports every week now.
Exactly. Yeah, I somehow snuck in sports once again as the usual short-term burst of good news. There's an Irish lad after making his debut in the NFL in the preseason for the Green Bay Packers. He's Mark McNamee. He's a Dubliner, a GA kicker. I mean, they're all kickers in GA, but he's transferred to American football. And it is extremely hard for a Fardiner from another sport to make it, to get even as far as he has, because basically you think you're fit and strong in the GAA and you go over to one of these camps and you're 152nd fastest and 134th at lifting stuff.
I was going to say, the state of America, you need to specify what kind of camp the person has been sent to.
Yeah, this is a sports camp and you can come and go as you please. Okay. I'm sure there was visa difficulties.
But of course.
Yeah, so like fair play to him. It's like
what
the culmination of a long... He's 25. He came to the 2025. A young pup, international player pathway program. Signed a contract with the Green Bay Packers in July. There's a Derry fella as well, a year ahead of him, Jude McTominay. So he is with the New York Giants and he scored a field goal and a point.
Fantastic.
In the New York Giants,
well done.
34-25 victory over the Buffalo Bills on Saturday. NFL, it has its own problems historically, racism, taking the knee, etc., etc. But you know what? We'll celebrate the corner of it that we like and know. And it is two lads doing well over there. Long journey, a testament to perseverance. And I don't know what else you need. A good leg.
Fair play
for kicking
them.
Things.
So every week on A Few Scoops, we have our listeners write in and tell us their good news. And we want your good news. It doesn't have to be big. It can be everyday wins. Did you find a fiver in your pocket? Did the person who wrote your parking ticket get your reg wrong? Whatever it is, write it in to afewscoops@goloudnow.com. And this week, Oasis Week, one of our listeners has written in and said they are finally going to see Oasis on Saturday night. This must be a woman because they've said, it's been nice to see the men in my life actually express joy and excitement for a change. I mean, whatever gets them there, love. I am not going to Oasis. I have heard how expensive the tickets are. And I'm not saying that me and Colin weren't flush doing this podcast, but I don't have Oasis money.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going because we're just embittered libs.
Yeah.
Just don't like to see people have a good time. Have they fixed that surge pricing?
Know someone very close to me who got a ticket yesterday and they had to pay 600 euros for it. And then he said that his wife would have to wait because she wants a new front door. But he's going to Oasis instead.
So and that's an actual front door we're talking about there.
An actual front door.
Innuendo or anything like
that. No, that's
okay.
That's actually it. And our second listener email says, hi, Aoife and Colm. Just ran my longest long run yet. 16 miles. Have to add another 10 before the Berlin Marathon in 6 weeks. Please pray for me. Fair play, whoever this person is. I don't think I could ever do a marathon. I've done a half marathon, but I could never do a full one, so fair play.
I just find, I don't know what ever run a marathon, it just seems like a long distance to run without carrying a message to the Greeks that the Persians have arrived. It's the kind of run I'd do, like if I had to bring a message to an army. But
well, I did a half marathon during COVID. Totally did it by myself and on a Saturday morning. And I got back from the half marathon and my legs were like jelly. And I said to myself, well, that's done. Never doing that again. And I haven't.
Was that before or after the vaccine then?
Oh, it was before the vaccine. Obviously, we all know what happened after the vaccine.
Yeah, you couldn't do it. You couldn't do it now. You'd only have one lung. And
the microchip weighs me down.
Well, it's good for tracking progress, though.
Yeah, I didn't even. You wouldn't even have to wear a Fitbit when you have your vaccine.
Yeah, yeah. Just log into Microsoft Online, and it's Bill Gates, and he's putting the microchips.
We're never going to sponsor for this podcast. So that's it for this week of A Few Scoops. I've been Aoife Moore. And if you could, friends, could you please rate and subscribe A Few Scoops? It really helps us reach new audiences. We are very glad to welcome loads of new listeners after All Together Now. And long may it continue. And what am I doing this weekend? I'm going to Limerick for a little friend housewarming party. Colm, have you big plans this weekend?
No major plans. I'll tell you one thing I'm not doing, hopefully, Aoife, is what I was doing last night, which is unblocking a waste pipe.
Like a sewage pipe?
A sewage pipe, yeah. In the words of, to paraphrase Blade Runner, I've seen shit you people wouldn't believe.
Colm just shooting the shit on his holidays in Cork.
Yeah, this is the kind of podcast banter that we signed up for, isn't it? Just, you know, how's your day? Yeah, up to my elbows in the consequences of my own actions. Well, if it isn't the consequences of my own actions.
That's it for A Few Scoops. See you next week.
See you next week.